Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds EP 324.
Hotel room episode, undisclosed location.
Undisclosed location. we're not in the city of San Francisco.
No.
We can't afford those hotels.
We're in a hostel somewhere.
So...
Wow. Man, you weren't kidding. You are thrown off by a hotel room.
Yes, that's the
weirdest thing. You said it before it started. I'm like, well, they're just goofing around. You have no fucking idea what you're going
to
say.
I don't know what to do. I'm not used to this.
Like, I don't know
understand.
What to do. It's so weird. So we're here for the San Francisco Documentary Festival, and we're very excited. We had the first earbud screening on Saturday, and it was amazing. I want to thank everybody for coming out.
A lot
out.
Of you guys came out. That was really
cool. Some
of
you drove up from L.A., which was really, really cool. Our assistant editor, Kevin, came up, and... Julia, who's in the movie, actually, they drove
Julia W.D. Harrison came out. This guy, we were walking like a block away from the theater, maybe 15 minutes or so before the movie was starting. This guy walks up and he had a Hanshot First shirt on and he goes, "Hey, Chris and Graham," he goes, "I'm so pumped to see this." He goes, "I'm bringing my daughters. I've had to go to so many of their dumb movies as kids." And there's these two, like, 13-year-old girls standing right there. And he's like, "So I'm making them come to see this. This is great." And he just had this, like, "Dad."
And they're just texting each other. You know they are. Yeah, look at it. Just LOL, OMG, dad's an embarrassment.
Dad's an embarrassment. But maybe our movies actually are dumb.
Yeah. As long as they filled out ballots for the audience award.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. As long as they voted for earbuds. So that was cool. We had a great Q&A later tonight, Tuesday, June 7th, is the last – well, there's only two. The second and last screening at SF DocFest, which is at 9:15 tonight at the Roxy Theater. If anybody happens to download this, be in the San Francisco area and have a couple hours.
And for somehow forgot – Russ been talking about it for the last month.
Maybe this is the one episode you've listened to in the last month. You've just rejoined us or, hey, just found out about us.
Yes. So get in that car.
Get the fuck down to the Roxy, bitch. There's you can take the BART in there. There's a lot of options.
It actually runs right into the Roxy, right. The BART. Yeah. Let you off right in front of the screen.
That is the voice of our guest and longtime writer for the site, been involved in many aspects of Comedy Film Nerds, and has a podcast of his own, Mr.
And is in earbuds.
Heavily featured in earbuds.
Yes. Yeah.
Mike Schmidt, everybody.
Hi, thank you. Hotel room episode.
Yeah. So this festival has been a lot of fun, but we've also been doing a lot of cool stuff here, too. We did our first fan spoiler ep for Popstar, which was really, really fun.
With Diana.
Diana Rogic. And we saw it, and then we went to the food court. Rogic Sconard. There
this
we go.
This is a hyphen name.
Now I apologize. I'm new. Imagine me as the new guy who just downloaded this week's episode. Walk me through this episode with a person who we've never heard of before. What happened? Why?
It was really, really great. I had done a Kickstarter for the graphic novel, and we put a tier for $1,000 where a fan could watch a movie with Graham and I, and then we'll record a spoiler up with them afterwards.
They picked the movie.
So this is a listener who could pick the movie and go with you guys and then participate in a taping of Comedy Film Nerds after to talk about said movie.
Yes.
That's pretty great.
It's pretty awesome.
Pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. So she picked... Popstar.
And I have to say, I wasn't really on board with that pick, but that didn't matter. I was like, I don't know.
How much did
you
give again?
$1,000.
You were so on board with that pick. I don't care if she said, watch my high school fucking graduation film. I would have gone.
Yeah, sure. Logistically, 100%.
Yeah. Financially, you're right.
Yeah.
Thematically,
Artistically, fine.
I'm glad she picked it, because I think you and I were both in the same way. We were like, I saw the trailer for this and was like, okay, I don't dislike Andy Samberg.
I feel the same way, neutral.
But sometimes he's funny, sometimes I'm like, okay. Movie was great.
Yeah,
it was hilarious.
Really funny. I was really happy to that she picked it, because then I'm like, oh, you know what? This is a movie I wouldn't normally have seen, and now I enjoyed it.
And also, she was a great guest.
Yeah.
So listen, that'll drop in a couple days. It's the Popstar Never Stop Stopping spoiler ep with Diana Rogic Sconard.
Yes. Sconard. And I found a little bit of trivia. Now, this is a rumor. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but...
Then by all means, go forward.
Yes, the naked person in the movie was Judd Apatow, who you don't see his face.
Oh.
So
that'd be great.
I would
Judd's crank.
Yeah. Oh, you see Judd Cock?
Yeah, Judd Cock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll see Judd Cock. So I would take that with a grain of salt, that rumor.
The rumor, not Judd Cock.
Yeah.
But Cock, you got a dick full.
Yeah. You got a shaker of salt.
So I'm thinking, you know, as no matter how big and powerful, would you really want to do that? Is there something?
Maybe you're so big and powerful, you're like, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
Like my
maybe
dick on screen, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Are you saying it wasn't a big and powerful crank? Are you saying it wasn't worthy of an Apatow?
Yeah.
I'm being honest. I mean, because you guys are like, maybe if you're so big and powerful, you don't mind showing your tiny penis. It's like, really? Yes. Okay, well.
No, it wasn't a tiny cock. It was a decent sized crank.
Just, it's average.
So it could have been a stunt cock. We don't know.
Nah, it's Apatow.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm on board. And because if that's not a thing, we're starting it now. That's right. A thing. Grain of salt cock, Apatow. It's a new
Hashtag grain of cock.
Grain of cock. Hashtag grain of cock. I'm going to write that down for the show notes. Yeah, it was.
Is it an absurdist comedy or is it played straight? How is it? Because I mean, it seems like it's the premise itself. Okay, go ahead.
It's played straight.
Yeah, and that's why it's
good. Funny because what they do is they do it like, you know, the record labels produce these quote unquote documentaries for these big name pop stars, you know, tours. And so it's starting out like that. And, you know, I've been blowing up. And he starts out in a boy band called the Style Boys with a Z. Mm-hmm. And they break up and he goes on a solo career and he blows up. And, you know, so now he's getting ready to release a new album and it's sort of like that. And the thing, and again, we go into more detail on the spoiler it, but like Chris and I are both watching this going, I hope this isn't too much like Spinal Tap.
Right, because that's how it starts.
Because that's how it starts. And that's, if you remember, two docs that came out in the 90s, and Godspoke and Fear of a Black Hat. Funny mockumentaries. Godspoke was about independent filmmaking, had a lot of great jokes in it. Fear of a Black Hat was about rap music. Both of them were beat for beat Spinal Tap.
Right.
Like, no, I mean, a guy dies, just like the drummer kept blowing up in Spinal Tap. Like, it was, and I remember was the one thing of both of those movies. I went, God, there were so many funny jokes, but man, they just.
But boy, Fear of a Black Hat, it lapped CB4. Because I remember CB4 was going to be the funny, like, rap movie. And I mean, Fear of a Black Hat is hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was so great when I saw it.
Well, again, there's both of those. And again, and Godspoke and Fear of a Black Hat have great jokes, and they're funny mockumentaries for sure. The one, you know, mark against them, I would say, is that they just beat for beat Spinal Tap. So this had a lot of great inside jokes mocking the current pop star, but then went in a different direction. Right when it was starting to be a little too Spinal Tappy, they went in a different direction.
Like they were aware of it.
They were very aware of it, which was cool. And there's a lot of great inside jokes. And so to answer your question about did they play it straight, yeah, because they interviewed actual people like Usher and you know, 50 Cent. And they acted, they were themselves, as though they were in a documentary about a real pop star talking. And they were like, oh, yeah, man, I you know. That first song, that was it. That got me into the business. You know, like they talked about him in that way. But there's just great jokes, and he spoofs a lot of people. And there's a lot. I was surprised by it, and it's a funny movie. And there's a lot of laugh out loud moments.
Yeah.
It's a cool film.
So it was really good. We're glad we saw it. Thanks, Diana.
Yeah, thanks, Diana. You're awesome. It just shows you this, like, you guys that came out to the Earbud screening Saturday. I'm sure most of you were Kickstarter donors, and then Diana doing this thing to help your graphic novel.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was so cool, and it was always really great because, you know, we don't get to have one-on-one film conversations with all of you, you know, but we got to do that, and it was a really cool thing. So.
And there are two more on deck, so yeah. we'll be setting those up as well. So let's talk about we've got a sponsor this episode.
Whoa.
Yeah, touchofmodern.com. Very excited. Father's Day is coming up. You want to make sure you get something special for Dad. And there's a lot of really cool stuff. There's tech gadgets. There's home brewing kits. That's like a big thing now, home brewing. Mm-hmm. Like, and a lot of times with home brew, there's like different levels of kits. Like, you know, you've got a starter kit. Then when you really get into it, you know, you buy more equipment. And, you know, it's like beer Legos. It's really, you know, you start out with a little set. I'm like, well, if you like it, oh, no, now you can get the $300 Star Destroyer, you know, whatever.
Well, it was funny talking about
your... Actually, that is a craft beer I've had, the Star Destroyer.
Yes.
It's a good IPA.
Well, I remember, I mean, part of Earbuds, and this was a cool whole day or two of interviews we did with the Brewing Network guys that didn't even make it into the film. But we were opened up into that world of craft brew, and those guys are for real. And I think, you know, you can go to Touch of Modern and start that whole, there's a Steak Champ, there's a Steak Essentials thing here.
There's tactical gear, fashion, men's fashions and accessories, and there's new sales every single day. You could check it out.
Well, that's the thing, and we've talked about it before. They every sort of week or so, they rotate stuff out, so... What they do is these aren't Touch of Modern's products. They make deals with all these really sort of cool, a lot of sort of independent companies, and they get like a limited number of stuff, and then they cut the price way down. Mm-hmm. Like those bike shoes I got, I've been using them. They were $100 bike shoes that I think I got for $50.
Right.
So, I mean, that's...
And if you like something, they do. It does go away in like a short amount of time. Like I remember I saw some really cool like 50 sci-fi art prints, mm-hmm. like with some, and you know, I'm like, oh, I'll get those maybe like... Tomorrow I was too busy, and then they were gone the next day. So as you see something you like, you definitely got to jump on it. There's no initiation fee. Mm-hmm. There's no membership dues or anything like that. You put your email in, you join, you are all set. You can take advantage of these bargains right away.
Sand-resistant beach towels.
Really?
What the hell is that? That could change my life. You know how much sand I bring into my house?
Oh, my gosh.
My car and house are just way too much sand. Oh, these are cool-looking towels.
But you also have a sandbox in your house, though.
Yeah, I mean, I have sand fights. I throw it in my house. And
let's be honest. You're homeless. You live on the beach.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Things have gone awry. You live under a dock.
So I really need a sand towel.
Yeah, you do. Wrap yourself up so you can sleep.
So go to touchofmodern.com, you guys, and refer a friend and get $20. So
get a taste.
Get a little taste. Get a taste for yourself. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get back now. We saw, we all saw... several documentaries in the last couple days here at SF Doc Fest.
Is it Indie Fest or Doc Fest? Let's get this right.
So SF Indie Fest.
Great question, Mike.
Great question, Mike. Thank you for asking. So SF Indie Fest overseas, they do several festivals throughout the year.
Think of it as the parent company.
Yes.
I will.
It's so Indie Fest is your daddy. And so they do several, and SF Doc Fest is just one of them.
Okay.
So like SF, like at SF Indie Fest is the Twitter handle. Doc Fest doesn't have its own Twitter handle.
Yeah, because we were hashtagging in nonsense last night, and I didn't know what was happening. And then and he was like, "It's Indie Fest, it's Doc Fest, it's Doc Fest, it's Indie Fest," and then we called the whole thing off. So.
So SF Doc Fest goes through June 16th. So if you're listening to this, there's still a lot more cool stuff you can see. There's a doc about Boyle Heights, the history of Boyle Heights that we didn't get to see. We met the filmmakers, these two women. They were at our screening, which was really cool. But we're going to get a hold of them and get a screening of it. So two nights ago, Chris, you and I saw Future of Work and Death.
Yes, the Future of Work and Death, which was a lot of interviews about how technology is changing the way we work and also how we die and if our consciousness can be uploaded to a computer and all that stuff. I have to say, I didn't like this film. And I thought it showed a couple of interesting things, but when you fill a documentary, first of all, it's a documentary about the future in technology, and it's filled with like 50s newsreel footage. Mm. I mean, I get the irony that you're trying to do, but no, it's... If you're going to tell me about the future and what's coming up, stop giving me all this retro footage.
Right.
The other thing that always puts me off on these documentaries, it's like, it's okay if you interview scientists and, you know, people that actually have some credibility in the scientific community. But when you give made-up titles like futurist and all these other weird, or like techno-philosopher, like I kind of tune out. So I thought there was a couple of interesting points being made, but then I thought a lot of it was just weird, bizarre speculation by people who just want to give themselves titles.
Well, Chris, as a...
futurist.
As a techno-sorcerer.
As a techno-sorcerer. I'm going to send some digital demons to
to your bank account.
To your bank account. It was interesting to me. It reminded me of there's a book that I've been just finished reading called Abundance, which goes in a little broader sense of how a lot of the problems the world is facing right now, which are serious, you know, starvation, water resources, overpopulation, like all
democracy,
all this thing.
Sand everywhere.
Sand everywhere. Special futuristic sand towels. And they're saying in this book, and it's one of the guys that helped create the X Prize, which is like it's like a $10 million prize, and they encourage people to come up with the coolest technology. And if you get it, you get funding and stuff like that. So the person writing this book, Abundance, is basically saying that technology can solve all these problems. And there's examples of how they've been working in smaller levels, and they talk enough. And this movie also talked about exponential, like technology is exponential. In 18 months, everything gets smaller, faster, cheaper, you know, and it's not like a regular distance. So it's not incremental, it's exponential. So that was fascinating to me. In the first part of the movie, I was really sort of intrigued with everything that was being said. And, but I think we talked about it. It felt like it could have been a 40-minute thing.
Right.
It could have been, or like a 30-minute news.
But how ridiculous is it to say, and how much of an indictment of the filmmakers is it, to say that a film about the possibilities of the future should have been much shorter? You know what I mean? It just seems like that's ripe for exploration and getting into topics and really finding a sweet spot to talk about everything. And you're telling me they gave you nothing and should have taken so much more out of it. That's just an indictment,
man. Well, it's a good point you bring up, Mike, because that was, I think, when Chris and I both around the same time started tuning out, because I felt like you're telling me the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, you propose these things initially, and I'm like, wow, this is interesting. This is intriguing. And it's all based in science. It's not like, you know, new agey, just put it on the secret vision board and that'll fix it. Like, it's like, no.
Smell this candle. Yeah. Now smell this candle.
You know, so that's intriguing, and it is where I think the filmmakers had an opportunity. Now, I'm willing to, I'm always more forgiving of an indie doc filmmaker, because I'm always like, well, how much money did they have? They ran, you know, they only had these handful of interviews they could get, and they only had money for probably fair use.
Which leads us back to him and his black and white footage. I mean, if you're looking for stock footage to pad out your thing,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Right. That is a very big indicator about lack of funding. So.
Right. So that gives me...
And lack of focus. It's like, well, this is how we're going to fill the time.
Oh, yeah. Jam a 50s dad in there.
Yeah. And that's exactly what they did. Yeah. Yeah. And here's how, you know, people used to work. And
the atom bomb is dangerous.
Right. It's a bunch of those. Yeah. It's a bunch of those. And it's like, okay, we needed to see some more, but they just didn't have the money or whatever. I don't know.
It's interesting you would mention that. We're going to get in. Man, I should hold this till we talk about the things that we saw together.
Well, let's get into them, because let's get into El Chivo.
All right, let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's dig into El Chivo.
Now, when you guys saw El Chivo, I saw a shorts program. So you guys go first.
No. Let's do yours first, because I know you loved your shorts program.
I did. I thought they were fantastic.
And coming off the bad taste of future of black and white, let's talk about something good.
The future of old stock footage. Yeah.
I thought the shorts were fantastic. Now, not every film festival does this, but SF DocFest did. They themed the programs very specifically. Like, sometimes they're themed more than others. This one was specifically cool old guys. So it was all little snapshots of documentaries of guys. Like, there was a beekeeper, a guy who did art for the Black Panther, a boxer and a bondsman, and a model, and a guy with cancer who wanted to walk the Camino. So it was interesting, and it was also a mix of, like...
And it's an individual short about each one of those people you just mentioned.
Yes, there were eight of them. There were eight shorts.
So they were what, 15 minutes of...
Different lengths. Right. Yeah, some of them were, like, under 10, and then, like, the last one was probably 20-some minutes.
The last one was 5 minutes.
I mean, that's the thing I want to say real quick that I dig about this festival is when we first got into it and we started looking at the programming slate, I'm like, because obviously it's a festival just with documentaries,
right.
So that could be pretty limiting.
Yes,
but they do a really nice job, I think, of going
and curating
a really wide range of things, and we'll get into it too when we talk about these other two movies we saw last night.
And one of the things I really liked too to see is like, oh, it's a shorts program, are people going to show up? And it was a great crowd,
great
really
turnout for crowd. Both of the shorts. Programs, the 7 and the 9 o'clock was really cool to see.
Yeah, so it was really good. So, and it was an interesting mix. Like, a lot of the shorter films, like the under 10 minutes, were like a snapshot of, like, here's a character who's been skating and has, like, the Church of Eight Wheels, and he teaches skate lessons, and, like, he's been doing it for 30-some years, and a lot of local San Francisco characters are in the area. Here's a guy who runs a boxing ring for At Youth Kids and all this stuff, like really cool stuff. But they were snapshots because they were shorter. A beekeeper in France, you know, and how none of the young people want to take care of the bees. And, you know, we need the bees for our, you know, not only economy, but also for our ecology and everything that, like, but he said all the old people are retiring and none of the young people want to take care of bees. So he's like, I have to keep taking care of my bees because there's no one left to replace me.
Wow.
So there was a couple really interesting things.
You know what they should have done? The festival should have paid, and then at the end of the 8 shorts, all of the people from the shorts should have had a dinner in their goofy beekeeper and roller skating costumes. It would have looked like a wrestling locker room with just like a beekeeper and like a guy who teaches boxing, and then like maybe they fight, and then it would be just this incredible weird discussion of their odd their shorts and things like that.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah, like
a wrestling locker room from the 70s.
Yeah. Oh my god.
That's what it would have been.
Because they had a really cool panel.
The beekeeper. The roller skater.
Because they had some of the guys were there and some of the filmmakers. So it was about 3 or 4 of
them. That's cool.
So you had like the roller skate guy in full outfit.
And his outfit was like funky, like he looked like a pimp.
Oh,
right?
Great,
awesome.
Great.
Yeah, it was. Really
I saw the
cool.
beginning. We saw the beginning part of that.
Yeah, and then we ducked back into art and ducked to see ours because ours hadn't started yet.
And then Phil's Camino, where a guy discovers he has cancer, but he always wanted to walk the Camino in Spain, but he couldn't.
So the Camino in Spain, real quick, is that like 3 week? I don't know. It's this long trail that's
long
sort
trail
of a pilgrimage. It's a Christian thing, right?
I think it might have started as like a Christian thing, but now everyone from all over the world comes to do it. And what happens is every time you
like
get
Christmas.
To a town, pretty much, where it has religious significance, but it's not.
And in that going to that movie that Martin Sheen did.
Right. I'll tell you what, the commercialization of the Camino has really got.
Yeah.
And the war on the Camino.
Yeah,
my God.
Yeah. The Way is the movie. And because every time you get to a town, you know, they stamp like your little passport kind of thing. And
really?
Then that shows that you've done every step of the walk.
And that was the sort of thing in The Way. And I'm curious to know about this documentary. Martin Sheen in that movie meets all these people along the way, and everyone sort of has their own reasons and journey, and some are religious, some are just like going through a time in my life.
Right.
He's an older guy. That was cool. So what was this?
So what he did was he kind of created a representation of it in his own yard, like on his farm, whatever. So he would just walk
of the
around,
Camino?
Of the Camino, and like every stop would be like a different city. Because
he had cancer and could not go to the actual one. So he recreated the Camino on his own property.
Yes.
Whoa.
Uh-huh. And he did. And then he was like, you know, I don't have much time left. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then,
I'm going to build a Camino.
Yeah. And then
he built it and he couldn't walk it.
Yeah.
At the end he dies. He's like at the last stop. He's like, oh, I didn't even get to walk my own Camino.
So he, but then what I loved about this movie is he gets the next scan and he's okay. He talks to his doctor. Look, I want to do this for real. Can I?
So he's cancer free.
So it's in remission.
Okay.
And so what he does is he goes to Spain and he actually starts to walk the actual Camino.
Whoa.
And it was really, really cool. And what I love about documentaries like that, when they show almost like a narrative progression, like you're rooting for this guy and you want him to go. And, you know, like these shorter ones are just like a snapshot in somebody's life. But this one, it was like you're just riveted to the story. Like, is he going to make it? What's going to happen? So there's footage of him in the actual Camino in Spain. He's in a church. He collapses. You know, you wonder, is he done? Is he going to finish or whatever? And the filmmakers at the talk, what I loved was they were saying people plan to walk the Camino in Spain for like 2 years. It's like a huge planning trip. You right. know,
they have to plan for 2 years, or they will walk the Camino for 2 years.
They will have to. They plan it sometimes for 2 years to walk it because you know it'll take like a month or whatever. And he goes, when he got his scan, he was gone in 2 weeks. He was like, he was just ready to go.
Yeah.
So he walked it. He finished it. He came back. And he did it, and it was like just this amazing story of just like willpower. And they did a really cool thing with the shot at the end, where you know we've been making films for a while. So whenever we see an aerial shot, I'm like, how the hell did they get money for a crane or a helicopter or whatever? And then you realize, no. You know, because they asked it at the Q&A. I'm like, well, how did you do that shot? It's just a drone with a, like a GoPro.
Oh, no, and the GoPro technology is so amazing. Mm-hmm. That's why anytime you see these amazing shots, and I did the same thing, like, God, that's so expensive. Now,
not anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing it like at surf competitions because helicopters get too low and sometimes they blow out the wave. So it was like, how do we get this footage? Now you just have drones flying and you have this amazing footage, and it costs hundreds of dollars versus tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it was, you know, like, oh, how did they rent a helicopter for a short film? That's crazy. You know, and it was a drone.
No.
You know what the last shot to that should have been? He should have finished the Camino in Spain and just looked at the camera and went, eh, mine's better. It's like it meant nothing to him. He's like, I built this thing.
What was all the hype? I should have stayed home.
So he said now.
I'm sorry, was it Jackie Mason? Yeah. Should have stayed home. Can't believe it.
He said now his home now has become like a destination. Like people want to walk his Camino at home.
How big is his backyard, by the way?
It's pretty big. It's like a farm. Right. So it sprawls for a while. Now they didn't like get into like every like step of it. So you look like he's like going through farm and like forest. And,
go with the distance.
Yeah. So it was great. It was a really, really great documentary. It was the kind of documentary like, you know, sometimes you see them, oh, it could be shorter. This one, I could have seen this being longer. I could have seen it.
You
could have
wanted a little more.
I could have actually watched this. I could have seen this turned into a feature if it was, you know, if there was just more stuff in there because it was such a rich story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you've got all this prep and him building it at home, then getting better, then doing it for real. I mean, you really have a structure for a feature. So yeah, I really enjoyed the shorts program. I'm glad I got to see it.
Let me ask you this. Is there any snapshot into his family? Is he a solo guy? Is he a guy who lives alone?
There was a snapshot into his family. They interviewed his wife. His wife was, you know, obviously very upset. They don't know how much longer he had. And right. So
they don't know how much longer he had. Are they cool with him taking on a big craft project in the backyard and spending time with the grandparents?
They were. The other thing that was interesting is
to a guy who's dying of cancer? Yeah. I want to do this thing.
Get in the house?
Yeah.
Hey, my last wish is to build this thing. No, it's not. You're going to sit with your kids and you're going
to... Well, but my last wish isn't to sit with my kids. Hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave my fucking family in the barn while I go out and I build a fake Camino. God damn it.
Hold on. This is bleeding into the next movie. That's why I think where Mike's frustration is. I think we'll get into the next movie in a second.
That's a good point.
I will say that... getting back to the family, so the family was represented as friends, and that was actually what I'd like to have seen more of, to see all that support. And but one of the things that was sad in the movie is that you know, the dog had cancer, so they had their dog, and the dog had cancer, and then the dog died at the party for him coming back from walking the actual Camino. Wow. So the dog actually dropped dead there.
You know, the dog's final wish was to ride an El Camino,
right? So it was
in the back,
face out.
Yeah. So it was great. It was a great shorts program, but Phil's Camino was definitely my favorite.
Okay, so we watched then.
The dog died. It's all. What an awful button. Terrible.
Yeah.
Sorry, now I got brought down. It's an uplifting story, and you're like, I could see him make a feature about the dog dying. What?
So this next movie we saw was El Chivo. El Chivo is Spanish for the mountain goat, and it's about this guy who lives in Asheville, North Carolina. His name is Will Harlan, and he's like an ultra-marathon runner, which ultra-marathoners, I found out in this film, where people run like these 34, a regular marathon is 26.2 miles, right? And these people run like 40, 50 mile marathons.
100 miles.
100 mile marathons.
24 hours.
Yeah. Wow. And a lot of them are like, they're not through a city. They're like trails and mountains, and they're really, really grueling. So it's a whole nother level.
We actually have a friend who does this.
Who?
Russ McGarry.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's been. He'd been. I don't know if he does it anymore, but he did it for a long time. And I mean, he was. I mean, crazy. So when I watched the movie, I immediately went to Russ.
So it feels like it's even more taxing than like a triathlon or something.
It's not. It's ridiculous. It's well, funny. I will tell you this because we. You know, the ultra marathoners, they run through the desert, they run through the heat and all that sort of thing. Mm. What we saw yesterday was something I've never even contemplated.
Through the mountains in Mexico.
There, it starts at the floor of this canyon, and then they run up through the mountains and down. And the astonishing athletic achievement is the mountain goat is a dude who lives in North Carolina, and we'll get to him in a second. But he's an ultra marathoner, so he knows how to do it. He has shoes, he has equipment, he knows about his health and how to stay on top of his sport. He's running against villagers.
This is the thing. So there's this. Wow. The indigenous, they're called the Tarahumara Indians of Mexico's Copper Canyon.
And so you're saying they don't have?
We're getting there.
Oh my God, Chris. So their race, you know, they cut out a piece of tire.
They take their bare foot and put it on the tread of a tire, and a workman cuts it out around their foot and then shapes it. And that's what they wear.
Sandals.
Oh my God.
They're running in sandals on rock, like hard rock, up and down mountains and ravines. Dude!
I mean, they are badasses. And that's, I mean, part of the sort of, one of the storylines in this is that these people are sort of, they're marginalized a little bit within Mexico. You know what I mean? With the Mexican government, there's talk that they sort of marginalize them a little bit.
They just want to exist. They want to flourish. They want to plant. They want to eat. And they want to run and raise families and live in this small town. But they're caught between the crossfires of the drug war and the government and people forgetting about them and not getting them any supplies. So a lot of these racing events and racers bring attention to these areas. So then seeds are brought in and they are able to grow and flourish as a village because there's so much attention put on them from these races.
Here's what you get if you finish 500 pounds of corn.
That's first fry.
That's what you win.
No, just finishing.
Just finishing.
Because people don't finish. They collapse. They break their legs. And so that's what the villagers are running for. Mm-hmm. So then
And the villagers are not only are they running, so they're not like, this is a lark. They need the corn. That's the thing. They are intensely, they're going to finish. They have to finish for their family for 500 pounds of corn for the rest of the year.
And they don't have $100 running shoes. They got an old goddamn tire that a guy cut out.
Wow.
Dudes are running in jeans.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. These dudes are running in jeans and like old Metallica shirts and these floppy tire flip-flops and just grim visage just staring forward as the sweat pours off their head and they catch it in a cup so they can drink it in October when the rains don't come. I mean, they are just fucking poor, man.
And that's the thing that I really liked about this is it focuses on this guy, Will, and he's an obsessive runner. And he interviews some other of these ultra marathoners, and they're all sort of obsessive.
Yeah.
And
Herman Silva, who won the New York Marathon twice.
So is it a mix then of Westerners and villagers?
Yeah. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Is it started small and the villagers, and then people heard about it. There's one guy, I forget his name, and he was the one who kind of got other runners involved. And then, of course, once American people shine a light on it, then other people start to come. And then, it's become this gigantic event. It's almost like a 48-hour thing where they party in the street and they have a big meal and they make this drink for everybody. And then they run the run. And then, and the thing is, at the end of the run, that dude, because also the first run we see is we don't even see the ultra marathon, okay, which is the 50-mile run through the fucking mountains. Mm. We see this run where they have to kick a wooden ball. It's they run in teams.
This is just the tribes run. So the big, the Copper Canyon Ultra Marathon. That's the big race that has now become an international event. So now this tribe, the Tarahumara, have this little thing just in their village where they kick this wooden ball these open-toed handmade sandals.
It's called like the Rahu Piari or something. I forget it. It's an event, and they have teams, and each team has their own. Ringer runner, and they have to run as a team, but they have to continuously kick. And first of all, when they get to town, they go to a sacred tree and they chop down chunks of it and they fashion the wooden balls for the race at a ceremony out of the sacred tree. Mm-hmm. Then they kill it, they slaughter an ox.
Which they show on camera, turn away.
Wow. I actually put my 3D glasses on. Yeah. So that's a jet stream in your face. And so then they chop this ox to bits, and then they cook him the fuck up, and then they eat him. And then the mountain goat dude, is trying to practice kicking the wooden ball, and he's like, this hurts, I can't. So the other team kicks the ball while he just runs.
And then you have to do laps. And there's an old guy with
20 separate 2-mile laps, loops.
Oh my God.
You're running a 2-mile course 20 times.
Until once the team gets lapped, then the race is over.
And the one team wins.
And the one team wins. And there's an old guy there with a rock going, oh, there's like 6 laps.
Every lap we take a rock away.
Wow.
And he's just sitting in a chair, you know, and again, there's mariachis all over the fucking joint, and just old corn cobs from the 40s. They're still lurking.
And they're wearing a traditional outfit. Like, it's
they got blouses, and the ghost of Condon Floss is there. I mean, it is ridiculous, man.
So that's when the race ends, when another team gets lapped.
Yeah.
Right. And again, that's not the main race.
That's the race you see in the beginning to warm us up. And they introduce
that's
us
part
to
of the undercard.
Oh, yeah. They introduce us to a guy named Miguel Lara, who he lives in a canyon in Mexico, so he could be 18, he could be 75. Right. It's one of those things where you don't know. I never saw his tooth because he didn't smile at all, because what's he got to fucking smile about? He lives there. But he's running, and he's the badass runner in that town. And then the El Fuermo guy, too, mm-hmm. who won it in 2004, 2006, 2008, and he's still running. Mm-hmm. And we don't ever talk to them, but we see them from a distance because they don't speak English, so they don't really chat with them. But they just live there, and they live to run these races and stuff. And that Miguel Lara was the one, you know, he's won the race, the ultra marathon now twice. And I'm thinking, they got to get this guy out of the canyon and get him on the Mexican Olympic team or something. I mean, he's running in jeans and flip-flops, and he's winning these 50-mile ultra marathons. And they're, you know, we're granted the vehicle to get to these people is to focus on this mountain goat dude, the white dude from North Carolina.
Entire flip-flops.
Oh my God. Absolutely. But I'm fascinated by the people who live there. There's more close-up of feet in this than a Tarantino film, because they're just showing you dirty, dusty, flip-flop, encrusted
feet. These guys' feet look like just hooves. They just look like stones. They are the most. Wow. These guys have the toughest feet on the planet.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like, they have like hobbit feet.
Yeah, they do.
Exactly.
So that's the beginning of the movie. We're sort of introduced to this guy Will and the whole community around these races in Mexico. And then we sort of go back to his training regimen, and we see how obsessive it is. How it's a strain on his marriage.
Here's his training regimen. He never stops. He goes to work, and then he just does push-ups and sit-ups in his office for an hour and a half while he's waiting for his next appointment. He's an editor of a magazine. Mm-hmm. He rides a bike from his farm to work, and then he runs at lunch. And then he does more sit-ups and push-ups and core work. I can't imagine – this guy just must smell like a ball sack, because, I mean, he is just sweating constantly all the time everywhere. And everybody keeps going, well, that's just Will. You know, he's obsessed a little bit, and we just kind of give him his space to do his thing. And then please continue with what you were saying.
Well, then we get into and his wife is like, well, you know, Will just leaves for these races. And I used to get mad and it's frustrating, but I just sort of let it happen. And then they kind of go back into more of the history of the racing, and they interview other racers. But then they come back to that. Mm-hmm. And his wife's best friend, they went to med school together. And she's like, yeah, Will's he's an interesting...
He's a bit of a character.
And everyone in the audience goes, shit.
Because we're now 40 minutes into the movie. All right? And we've kind of... We have our own opinions of Will at this point. You know, because he wants to help the indigenous Indians and stuff. But you can also see he's a little fucking bananas. Mm-hmm. Again, he gets in his office and he strips down to shorts and he's doing push-ups and sit-ups the whole time.
Wow.
Then they talk to his mom and dad, and when he wasn't running, he was swimming. When he wasn't swimming, he was biking. He doesn't stop moving at all. He's constantly vibrating, and he needs to be doing something.
And his wife even says, you know, Will comes from a family of a lot of depression and anxiety, and I think his exercising is what keeps him from doing that, from getting depressed and having anxiety. So it's
now, when we say he goes to races, she would wake up in the middle of the night and he'd be gone, and she would find out he went to San Jose for a marathon. He doesn't tell her.
Wow.
He just goes because
that's not even a note on the fridge.
No, exactly.
Running marathon.
He would call from there. He would call from there, or he'd call after the race or something. And it's now the way one of them puts it is it's just the third member of our marriage.
That's how his wife puts it.
That's what she says. And they show him, you know, he's in fucking Mexico drinking corn juice and taking an IV, and she's feeding goats and out in the harsh North Carolina winter. She's bringing
with hay like a out 6-year old.
Yeah. Wow. She's tending the farm and doing all the chores and everything. And this dude he breaks his toe in the first race. Okay, he breaks it, and they tell him, well, you're probably not going to be able to race in 5 weeks. So, and really? Guess what? Guess what happens in 5 weeks? Not only does he partially tear his Achilles, he's racing. He's racing on it no matter what. I mean, this dude falls in the middle of a race and has to take an IV. And then he gets up holding the IV and walks barefoot through the town, hobbles.
Well, everyone cheers for him because he's like, I've never not finished a race.
So I'm going.
Wow.
So, and this is the thing that's sort of, for me as an audience member, part of you is like, I want a jackass. And then you're like, you know, he has this weird thing. He goes, I feel like I need to suffer because, you know, my life is nice and I know there's people suffering out there. So suffering for a race, which I knew was temporary, it's going to end where other people are suffering all day, every day. They show it. He was on an episode of Oprah.
Well, then build a house for Habitat for
Humanity.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Know,
exactly.
It's, you don't have to break your toe and walk, hobble through a town. That doesn't help anyone.
And I think that's sort of the progress. And I think I like what the filmmaker did, and sort of we see in the feature length version of what you saw in Phil's Camino in terms of this guy's arc. We saw his character arc, because then we start getting into he's like, we're going to get – they start this organization called Barefoot Seeds, I think. And which you can go to barefootseeds.org and get seeds for this this indigenous tribe, people in the Copper Canyon, because it used to be – the canyon used to be very lush and flourishing, but drought, drug wars, land rights issues have made it really tough for them. So they're bringing in seeds. And there's a scene in there where him and some of these other runners are helping.
Oh, well, that's great.
And so you kind of see that, and then you meet.
Yeah, but he's got a 6-year-old watching, you know, football on a laptop at his house, wondering when daddy's coming home.
Oh, right.
And the whole movie is a metaphor for running away from things. You know, that's what he's doing is he's essentially running away from his family, even though his wife gives him plenty of rope.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, he's on an episode of Oprah because they talk about this weird thing that he does. He doesn't sleep in the bed with his wife. He sleeps on the deck on the floor because in 17 degree weather. And he says it's because he likes sleeping under the stars and he loves the earth and he's in harmony with the earth. And his wife is like, could you fucking sleep in bed with me once? That would be great. Yeah. And obviously he did once because they got a kid. But he tells a story. Is it too much to tell what the story he told? Well, there's a turning point in the film where you go, I hate this fucking guy. Because in the beginning, you're like, I understand his obsession.
I'm rooting for him, yeah.
I might be on board with him, but I also can see this guy's got something going on that I can't understand. Right. He's running and running and running for something he will never fucking catch. Then he tells a story, two stories, right in the middle of the movie, and you just laugh because you go, I hate him. I don't care for him or his behavior, and he can't see that he's being destructive. Even if his wife's allowing him to do these things, he's still causing psychic damage to his wife and his kid and himself.
Being kind of selfish.
Yeah. Is it wrong to tell the stories that he told? Because it's a key moment in the movie where you just go, it shifted me completely. Well, where I was like,
we could just put this as spoiler alert if you want.
Spoiler alert on this movie El Chivo. I think you should go see it because
it's very interesting. Just if anything, ignore the big bald white dude and look at the plight of the indigenous peoples and just go, fuck, this world is a lot bigger place than I ever thought.
But there's maybe we shouldn't spoil because I want people to actually see this movie.
Okay.
So
that's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
spoiler alert withdrawn.
I mean, so what happens to him in the end and everything is really compelling.
It's worth it just to see the race footage. To see you know, 13-year-old girls wrapped up in colorful scarves with their feet caked in dust up hills.
Do they show, like you said, they showed the wooden ball race. Do they show the main race?
Twice.
Okay. They do, because then there's the final race at the end. And there's a great interview, too, with, I forget the guy's name, the Mexican guy who won the gold medal
That's Herman Silva.
Yeah, Herman Silva. And he's talking about that. And he's talking about, I don't care what a guy says, you know, when he wants to come to a race and he says, I'm just here to finish it. He goes, you're a competitor. You're going to want to win it eventually. I mean, that's just who you are. And Herman Silver makes some great points about there's a thin line between passion and obsession.
Yeah. And people come from all over the world for this race. There's Dutch people, German people, they're all running. There are people running it and people just there to observe.
So it's for people who want to do the Camino, but faster.
Yeah, it's a fast Camino. Go see El Chivo. It's a fast Camino.
Yeah.
But it's. I'll say this overall. It's a really compelling documentary. I think the filmmaker did a good job of telling the story and getting you to have a real distinct. I mean, that's the thing about a good documentary is sometimes the focal person of the documentary, you go, what a fucking jacket, you know, and like you go through that story and the people around them and you're rooting for them, but you're like, this guy keeps fucking shooting himself in the foot or whatever the thing is. And so I think the filmmaker did a really good job.
I agree. I thought the same thing. And it is worth it to see a world you've never seen before. And it's worth it to realize that there's so much more out there and so many, because I mean, we all hear, you know, people need help and there's, and I joke all the time about the coming water wars and all this, but it's a real slice of a small part of the world that needs help and has found a unique way to deal with it.
And they, yeah. And it's really cool. It's a cool film. So check it out, El Chivo. All right. So speaking about a weird world that you might not know about.
Was the last movie we saw, The Dwarvenot. Really interesting film about...
Now, we were all in the room for this one,
We were all in the room for this one,
Chris went and saw some shorts.
Yeah.
Graham and I saw El Chivo. We all came together with Wonder Twin powers and activated at The Dwarvenot.
And when I saw this description, I'm like, oh, I have to see this movie. Here's a guy obsessed with Dungeons & Dragons that starts his own company to make miniatures. Stefan Pokorny. And the thing about Dungeons & Dragons is, if you ever played it, it's a pencil and paper role-playing game. But to embellish it, a lot of times you would have like little figures and
cardboard dungeon foldouts
and maps and stuff. But these guys really take it to the next level and literally craft dungeons, like modular, where you could put them together. You could build castles, you could build towns, and you could build all these incredibly detailed miniatures. It's like the equivalent of like train collectors making like a train platform with houses and stops and stations. But it's also ingenious the way it's put together. I ended up watching a little bit of the videos because they have training videos too. When you buy these pieces, how you can put them together, and they're magnetized. So you could put them together and they'll like stay.
That explains a lot because we were watching it
apart.
Yeah, and I kept wondering. You know, it seems a lot looser than
So there's actually magnets inside them to keep everything together. And then, you know, you build a base set and you build, you can add on with like balconies and then you add fountains and all these different terrains. And you think, well, who, you know, is there a lot of people interested in that? Kickstarters. Probably, I think they said over $4 million raised in Kickstarters, like three campaigns. The last campaign, like over $2 million.
Well, the last campaign... Well,
that's the arc of the film. Yeah. So he's trying to raise
$2 million, right. Like the other ones
that's
were
what
less.
This movie's essentially about his last Kickstarter campaign, where he's trying to raise $2 million to build his entire vision.
Yes.
Because he's been building dungeons, he's been building all these things that you can use within Dungeons & Dragons, but since he's been a child, he had a city in mind. And he wants to create the entire city and stories and characters and essentially create his own Dungeons & Dragons within Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes, and that's the other big difference is normally when you build or when you sell these, like there's other companies that do this too, you're just kind of like, it's like, well, you buy a house, you put a house in there. You buy, you know, a part of the dungeon, put the dungeon there. But what he was doing with this last one was not only was he building the entire city, he was creating the dungeon modules to go through, where he's creating the characters and the stories and the adventures. And normally that doesn't happen. Normally it's for Dungeons & Dragons, the Dungeon Master creates it, or you buy a module, and then you just use these, you know, pieces to kind of put it together. But it's the first time like it's ever been done in that grand a scale, where he's not only building the buildings, he's not only doing the adventures, but he's got all the maps of the city planned out. Like every section of the city is on these giant maps. So it was fascinating.
The thing that I absolutely loved about this movie is it does what Mike was talking about with El Chivo, is it brings you into a world. I don't know much about Dungeons & Dragons at all. I never played it. I had some friends that played it. Mm-hmm. I definitely was like, oh, this is too nerdy for me when I was a kid growing up. Like, I like comic books, and I was like, oh, this is too nerdy, and ugh, whatever. Like, you told me it's a movie about Dungeons & Dragons, and my first instinct was, maybe not.
Yeah.
But it is good filmmaking.
Right.
The filmmaker, the director is Josh Bishop, who also did this movie called, his first documentary, he's done two, Made in Japan, which is about the first ever country music star from Japan that, that exploded onto the scene, like in the 50s or something like that. So this filmmaker, the opening scene, he uses a lot of and he does this throughout the movie, which was really compelling to me visually, close-up footage of these cities and all of this guy's work, his work building these characters, and
they're lit too. There's like LED lights, and there's like little
small dry ice.
Yeah, dry ice. There's like smoke effects.
It was so cool. And so the opening of the movie is like bum bum bum, and you're like, oh shit, the filmmaker brought me into this. I'm excited. I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. And then we get into and we meet this guy, and he is really a compelling person to watch. This guy, Stephen Pokorny, in terms of his voice is odd. And then, so within the, like, we get backstory of who he is, but he keep, like, learning more about him and the history and his parents. He was adopted.
Twice.
Mm-hmm.
On his third set of parents.
Yeah, from Korea. And his final set of parents were a Czech man and an Italian woman. And, you know, he grew up speaking Italian.
And they got him secondhand, basically, because he was a Korean woman and an American GI during the Korean War, or whatever, the Vietnam War, maybe. And she gave birth to him, and then the GI split, and then she gave him up for adoption, and then a couple adopted him, and then went, we don't want this guy.
Yeah, it wasn't getting along with our other kids.
Yeah, it didn't get along with the other kids. They returned him like he was fucking towels. Mm-hmm. And then another family just went, we'll take him, and he's already two at that point, so he's conscious of what's happening. And then he winds up kind of, you know, rebelling against society a little bit where they...
Didn't do well in school.
No, but his parents are really good.
And also, and he's talking about the streets of New York City in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
There was danger there.
Yeah.
Tells a story early on about a fate a friend met, and you go, oh, that's where he lived.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
And fights, and he was just rebellious, and then talks about that thing that I think a lot of people go through, but especially people with like any sort of a unique personality that has a unique skill. He's not doing well in regular anything, and then finds this art teacher.
Art school,
but specifically this teacher that he talks about, this old guy who was
Mr. Greenberg,
who just, because he's kind of an old tough guy, he was a vet, but he just was like, yeah, that's great work.
Do this. He told him do this.
Yeah. And the kid just was like, okay. And then he talks about how then he sort of flourished. And so his story is really compelling.
Now, let me jump in. Because you guys are movie makers and filmmakers and stuff. After about a half hour, I lost all steam for this guy. I think what he does is fascinating. And I think the things that he creates are brilliant. And I love his work and I love his commitment to it. But as filmmakers, do I need to see him drinking 100 times? Do I need to see him tell the same story over and over and over about his parents and what he's done? I mean, I understand you're trying to make him compelling and interesting. The entire movie to me is, are they going to fund the Kickstarter? And because they tell you right in the beginning, they launch it and you go, okay, we really got to hope that they do this. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and again, for me, maybe it's just because the movie falls flat on that, because you either know they're going to fund it or they're not. And there's no way they're making a documentary about a guy who didn't fund a Kickstarter, because he keeps saying, if this doesn't fund, I'm going to be waiting tables. If this doesn't fund, I'm bankrupt. If this doesn't fund, I'm ruined. So the end is already the beginning for me. I know he's going to fund it. There's no triumph. I'm not waiting for that to happen.
Well, for me, actually, that's for me, I didn't, because I've seen documentaries about the guy. Like, Spinning Plates is a great example that Joseph Gordon-Levitt did a documentary. But Joseph Levy did this documentary, Spinning Plates, about three different types of restaurants. One is a big, fancy, this place in Chicago that's at, like, this. The guy is the Picasso of fucking chefs. And
it's got to be Grand Ashitz.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm serious.
I think it is.
It might be.
Yeah, yeah.
It's where you have to wait forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You make reservations. You actually buy tickets online to go eat dinner there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and okay. he just brings you...
Alinea. Right?
That's it.
That's it. So they're showing that guy. They're showing this like family diner in Colorado or something, or some town like that. And that's great. And then they're showing
a Mexican restaurant
in Tucson that's struggling, and they don't all make it, you know? So to me, like, I, as a guy, and again, I've watched 1,000 documentaries. So I've seen the documentary where the guy didn't make it.
Now,
the
kid, I mean,
like Hoop Diaries, the kid didn't make one of his kids.
Now, here's, let me, put a different spin on it. I think that the filmmaker was savvy enough to know that you're right, that like, well, we're making it, you know, it's probably going to fund if we're bringing it up to all this. So I think the filmmakers step back a little bit and goes, look, the audience knows that we're making this document, it's probably going to fund. So why don't we concentrate more on the character and what he's doing and his art. It didn't bother me, like, mm-hmm. when he was talking more about his parents and we saw him drink a little bit more, because they
alluded
to the
issue.
It's a fake issue put in to create some sort of reason to be worried during the film.
They're
making it play out like maybe he's going to be so drunk they're not going to fund, or maybe he's going to sabotage himself.
I didn't read it that way.
I'm waiting for conflict and there is none.
I didn't read it that way. I read it as like more of a portrait, like here's every facet of this character. Like, you know, he's interesting, he's very talented, but he's also got these issues.
I found him one note the whole
time. I had a different impression.
I like the fact, I mean, I certainly admire the fact that he's my age and he has carved out a niche doing what he loves and he's incredibly talented at it. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed like they tried to create too many facets to a guy that has no facets. We didn't meet the girlfriend. We don't see where he lives. We don't really learn anything about him except he likes weird hats and he drinks a lot. You know, I'm being honest. And then the conflict is when the guy from Dungeons & Dragons pulls him aside and goes, hey, man, you drink a lot. You know, you should return a phone call once in a while or whatever.
Yeah, and that was a great scene.
Because
hey, those guys came to me. He goes, you're an adult. Make your own decisions.
Yes. You have willpower. And then he walks away. And what's that resolved with? An eye roll, wink to the camera, and then he goes up and eats a cheeseburger and talks about doing shots. I mean, it just, there's not enough there. Everything slid off this fucking guy's back. And I get it, that's the personality he is. Mm-hmm. But there was no self-searching, and I guess maybe I'm looking for something that shouldn't have been in this sort of movie. But I would have liked to learn more about him because, you know, almost at the end, the maudlin, I don't know if it's a spoiler alert or whatever, but there's a scene, it's maudlin he's at gravestones and he's crying, and I'm like, I don't buy it. I almost thought he phonied up for the goddamn camera, because up to that point, we've not seen one scintilla of emotion from this guy other than wee.
Well, I don't know. I think that's, he's not great at expressing emotions because of everything that he's been through. It didn't bother me. I didn't feel that was contrived. I thought those were real tears. And
I don't mean to step on you. I would have rather seen a fascinating documentary about his business and the creation of all of that stuff. When they show that dude fashioning the wolven face that's on the head of the door.
The clay. Those guys.
It's amazing. Yeah. Those
unbelievable.
Artists. Yeah.
The artists and the artistry and putting together. I would have much rather seen a documentary about how to do that and the way fans react and respond to those sorts of things, mm-hmm. and maybe even expand it to the artists and find out about how they learned how to do those things, rather than him going, I gotta go pick up some socks, wee! Mm-hmm. I mean, I found him to be, after a half hour, mm-hmm. a grating presence where I just went,
That's interesting. I didn't feel that way. I thought I wanted to see more. Now, I do agree with your point that it would like to have seen, like, the girlfriend a little bit more of his home life and what else is going on in his life, but yeah, I liked it. I liked the balance of the, you know, seeing the work and seeing him and seeing how, you know, he's got some issues for various reasons, everything from addiction to denial.
Sure.
To, you know,
but explore them
a very tough past. So,
but when he's alluding to the fact that if this fails, we're bankrupt. If this fails, we've got nothing. We're totally going under. I'm going to be waiting tables. And then they take a 7-person limousine to the fucking convention stocked with liquor. And then they're staying in a suite that is gigantic. I'm like, where's your money getting spent? If you're this broke, if you have nothing. And then they go from a 600 square foot space to a 2,200 square foot workspace in fucking Brooklyn. Now that's money. So where'd that money come from? Because
with a lot of graffiti too.
Well, exactly. But he funded the other Kickstarter for over $1 million. Well, hey man, where the fuck is that? Where'd that money go? That you're all broke and you're gonna fucking fall apart. And I will say this: the money's going into the work. The money's going into the product, because Jesus Christ, incredibly beautiful work.
Yes.
And astonishingly efficient craftsmanship. And to watch that, I would have watched a fucking hour and a half of them making those.
It was amazing.
Beautiful, beautiful craftsmanship.
Every little brick, every little
everything.
Thing. Yeah. And also too, it's really only a portion of the work when you see it being crafted. Painting, alone all after of it. That.
Well, the magnets. They never once said the magnets were there.
Right.
Because if I would have known that, it would have taken a real thing out of the equation for me, because I'm going, was this all loose? Like, how do they? Because also, some of the rooftops fit on other buildings. I thought, this is brilliant. The whole thing's interchangeable. Like you said, you had the Lego thing earlier.
Right.
It was very much like that. Mm-hmm. But it's medieval Legos.
Yes.
And it creates a city. And they've created maps and all these really in-depth characters. And
accessories, too. Like, I went on the website. I was really curious. There's, like, stuff like, you know, if you have a tavern, you could buy, like, a bar. You know, you could buy, like, you know, all these different little accessories. Like, oh, you want to put a balcony on the house or...
well, dude, there was a turkey dinner. They made a tiny little turkey dinner. There's all these different... And it's unbelievably fascinating to me.
Rats with swords and stuff.
Right? Yeah.
So great. And so I would have preferred more of that. Because I will say, about two-thirds of the way through the movie, we finally get to see him working. Because I'm wondering, what does he do other than walk around and go, well, everybody, ha-ha, and wear his hooded fucking cape? But finally, they see him sitting at a desk, and he's crafting this amazing thing, and you're like, oh, he's got that in him. He does. He's not just a fucking Asian six-pack with a hood on. I mean, fine, I get it, but it just, they didn't portray enough of him for me. They tried to dig where there was no depth. That guy is like a shallow dude in my opinion.
I viewed it differently because, and maybe this is just the filmmaker in me, I was so intrigued visually by the shot selection that the director used, that showing me the detail of the guys, we saw a lot of shots of the guys working with these specific clay tools to mold these things that explained it enough for me. Like, I was like, wow, this is really in depth. This is really intriguing. If they would have given me a little more detail on this is how it's made, specifically this clay, this product, this whatever, that would have been sort of intriguing to me. Just as a small business owner, I was like, yeah, man. Everyone goes, oh, $1 million, just like $140,000 for earbuds. What's the problem? Like, that's not. Like, Julia, who was in the movie, asked us how come it took so long to finish it. And I was like, it's fucking 2 years. That's not a lot. You know,
that's a great point. I wasn't meaning to make it look like they
even says it in the movies. Like, oh, people ask, like, wow, how come there's so much? You know, why does it cost so much? And what are you doing with all that money? It goes into the work. Like, people don't realize how expensive it is for all these materials to make.
Because that's the thing. The guy could be, I mean, he could just make one replica and send them off to China and get them made for $0.04 a piece, and he could bang out and get 50,000 of them sent to his house in a week.
But that's why I found it so fascinating and wanted to learn more about the creating of it. And are they all, does he make one giant prototype and then they may mass produce? I never got that. Because if they're fully doing every set by hand,
they're
selling 50,000 of them, I mean, Jesus God, that's got to be a lot. A ton of work, a ridiculous amount. And you know, it's funny you say the director in you was satisfied with this. Well, the writer in me wanted to know how they created all of these backstories for these characters. Because there's at one point they show them all sitting around typing on a big screen and going, oh yeah. And you start reading the florid Dungeons and Dragons dialogue. Mm. I want more of that. I mean, I would have loved to see them creating the full stories. Because there's at one point where he's got the cell phone and he's like, we got to work the Greek gods into this somehow. Well, I would have, and then later on, you see someone go, I love the fact that you put the Greek gods in here.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to hear about that. What role do they play? A lot of stuff like that. It just, as it is with most documentaries, there's that thing where it's like, oh, what's going to happen in the beginning? Oh, it might not happen in the middle. Oh, yay, it happened at the end. And he bails on the Kickstarter about two-thirds of the way through the film, and then it becomes more personal. He starts talking about them, you know, going out in the street and the sword fighting and all that bullshit. And so you go, well, then at the end, all of a sudden, they're like counting down the kick. We don't get a Kickstarter update for like the last 30 minutes of the movie.
We find
and
out,
then they go, yay!
Yeah, well, we find out 3 days out that they're $700,000.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So this isn't really a spoiler alert in the sense that these products are available.
Yes. and the company's name, we haven't mentioned it, is Dwarven Forge. And one of my favorite scenes in the movie was when he said he was trying to like register the name.
Yes.
And there was like, you can't make up names. And he's like, no, Dwarven's a real word. You can use it. They argued back and forth. And then he goes, it's a company. You can't make up words. And then somebody says, yeah, I remember Tolkien. Dwarven's an actual word. But then my favorite part was the tag when he goes, you know, I'm pretty sure companies make up their own words for the name of their companies.
Yeah.
All the time.
And it was Microsoft.
But such a great scene because it's early in the film and it gives you that complete contrast between the real world and this guy's world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He shows up in an office of bureaucrats and goes, "Wee, Dwarven Forge." Yeah. And they're like, "Hey, idiot.
Get a real name."
Amalgamated Building. That's a name. Clay Idiots. That's a goddamn name. Fuck we. That's not a name.
Well, that's interesting. So, I guess I was really drawn into the, and I love this guy's, he makes a great point of, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, it sort of wasn't as popular for a while. And he's like, you know, when he first put his booth up in the 90s, he sold a million, you know, he sold all this stuff and he started his company. And then in the early 2000s, I guess it sort of died a little bit. And he goes, the reason I think it's important is because we're so looking at screens all day. You know, we're talking on our phones. Yeah, we're interacting digitally. He goes, but this game is important to me. And it was sort of, he gave this sort of passion in his mission statement or whatever you want to call it about sitting around a table interacting with people where you're storytelling, you're being creative, you find out people's personalities and how they play. And I was like, well, that's really cool because, I mean, I've been saying just in my own, like, I was never Dungeon, but I like board games. I like Monopoly and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And even just playing cards, playing poker, I don't do that often. I'm using games with like a $10 buy-in. It's not big stakes, but it's not about that. It's about sitting around the table with your buddies and talking and interacting and catching up or stuff like that.
It's so high for Monopoly buy-in, $10.
I was talking about poker. Yeah.
I thought this was a really great look at a person who's created his own world and doesn't have to deal with the rest of the world.
Yeah,
this is a guy mm-hmm. who
created his own fort, right. yes. his own office uh-huh. that yeah. all of his all.
It's D&D. A pillow fort.
Yes,
it, right. literally, it he really is. He is a 48-year-old man who has created his own pillow fort, and thankfully, through his amazing craftsmanship, the talent, and his connections in the internet,
yeah.
has been able to create his own world and live in it, and not have to worry.
Right.
You know, he's because again, even though he was funding a Kickstarter, he was funding it for love and joy. He wasn't trying to pay his rent. Wasn't trying to pay his car payment. This is a guy who was trying to get a lot of money to do the thing that he loves most in the world, and people came through for him, and he's able to do it.
Yeah.
So in that aspect, I love that part of it.
I think that was why I was so on board with this dude, because I just felt like we have been living that. We've been living a yes. version of that ourselves. Like, we've all done Kickstarters. We've right. all podcasting, mm. film nerds, earbuds.
And I'll tell you, from doing the last Kickstarter too, I started kind of shopping around on Kickstarter more, and I started backing more projects because mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what, this I want to give some back. And also there's some really cool stuff on there, like everything from board games, there's other films, there's some cool stuff. And as I was looking at the stuff last night, like all like it's like caverns and towns and dungeons and castles, I'm like, you know, I don't play Dungeons and Dragons anymore, but the models are so cool.
It's art.
Yeah,
I want to play them.
Yeah, I kind of want at least just a house or something like to display. They're so neat.
I want to get together and yeah. play. Like, I was like, I'm in. I want to build this town, and yeah. I want to have rats with swords right. fight things. And I'm like, I'm in. Like, yeah. I wanted to. It seems really cool to me.
It was. It was really.
You got to dress up for yeah. this. I'm in.
Yeah. And what's funny is what's appealing to you is maybe not even the Dungeons and Dragons, but as you just said, the sense of community, of getting a group of people together. Because this is a dumb thing. As I get older, you know, my friends have kids and they have wives and they've lived their own lives. I rarely see anybody. And that's why I actually had the idea. We were talking about going out to, like, I was like, I'd love to get a cabin and go with my friends and just hang out and go, you know, fishing or whatever. And all my friends are like, you hate fishing. Like, you don't want, you don't like any bears or woods or any of that nonsense. And I just realized I'm pining just to hang out with my friends right. for 4 days. You know what I mean? I don't give a fuck about the where or when.
Let's just find a thing to do.
To do, mm-hmm. exactly. And to a sense of community or something that brings us back or something that tethers us all back together again, you know. And I don't know if it's pining for the past or what it is, but it's deeply ingrained.
I'm sure some of it is just, you know, when you were in high school, college, your early 20s, we all just hung out because right. no one was married with kids and all jobs.
And everyone lived in the same town.
Everyone yeah. in the same yeah. town. I just was talking about, I was at Retta, Rita the Joke Diva, who's been on the show, has this birthday party every year, the pink party where you got to wear pink, and I always miss it because I'm always on the road. Well, she had it's in April. She had it. And I went there and ran into all these comics I hadn't seen in years. And one of them brought up a great point. When we were in our early 20s in L.A., we saw each other every night because we were going to all the shows. Every right. night, we're going to all these shows.
And everyone was having a party somewhere.
Everyone, mm-hmm. There was a party or meet mm-hmm. at this bar, and there's a barbecue this weekend, and then there's a my friend's having a screening party, or there's a, you know what I mean? Like, I knew mm-hmm. people, I work at Nickelodeon, I'll get, and there was all these fucking right. swanky Nickelodeon
you're in
party.
A green room for no reason.
Yeah, right. yeah.
Eating uh-huh. red vines and trying not to get noticed.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or there's like, you know, MTV's having a, someone's having a launch or a screening yeah. and there's free drinks and yeah. there's appetizers. And yeah. like
at 10 o'clock, you're getting ready to go out.
Yeah.
And now 10 o'clock, I'm asleep.
Yeah. yeah. And so I have that same sort of pining of like, that's all. I guess that's why, you know.
Well, and a lot of that, too, is the fact that I don't have any kids and all that
neither
stuff.
Why,
you
yeah.
don't have any kids. You didn't, you know, I don't have that. So you find yourself looking for a sense of community, I suppose. I don't know what it would be.
And also something to do with all that extra energy.
Oh, my so. God, yeah. I am so energized. Good Lord. I was a half asleep at El Chivo last night. The only thing to get me awake, I was rage waking up. That was the thing, rage waked.
But that's, again, like, and, you know, we that's why we created the PodFest. That's why we did the film, was to show this. It is this, you know, the thing I love about PodFest is it's, I feel like it's a high school reunion for, like, there's comics I see once a year. There's, you know, at PodFest because we're all busy and on the road or whatever. And that I dig. So you can kind of start your own nerd camp.
So, all right. So if you're, like we said, if you're in San Francisco and you're listening to this in time, come to the Earbud screening tonight, 9:15 p.m.
At the Roxy, Tuesday, June 7th, and also SF DocFest.
9:15? 9:15. Tonight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was at 7.
Nope.
7:30, I thought.
Take a nap, friend.
Wow. All right. Well, that's changing some things.
Yeah.
You're not driving back tonight, are you?
Well, I wasn't.
Yeah.
But now if we get out of there, I mean, you know, I thought we had a 7:30, and then I was like debating, oh, I'll stay the night or whatever. But if I'm not going to get out, because I have my show tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. in L.A. So, I mean, if we get done by 1:30...
It won't be that late.
It'll be late.
It will be. We're going to show it twice. Encore.
Oh,
people leap to their feet. Oh, we must see it again. Woo!
We're going to do an Earbuds cosplay. Is that what
we're
going to
get that? Together and we'll play Dungeons and Dragons. I built little stages and little microphone tripods. That's what I spent the night doing out of cardboard and orange skins. I just started creating a little pod fest, like a diorama. And we go, oh, look, we're going over here.
There's the Sofitel.
Oh, my God. Look, what's that? A mop? No, that's TJ Miller. All right, let's go in the other room.
Did you incorporate Greek gods?
Of course. Why wouldn't I?
As long as there's vapor yeah. rats.
The dork forest with Dionysus injectication.
All right, yeah. So 9:15 tonight, Mike.
Cool. I'll be there. Thank you for telling me.
I think it's sfindiefest.com. But anyway, if you just Google SF DocFest, you'll see the web info if you want to see more films there. Earbuds is only screening tonight, but there's a lot of other great docs. I don't know.
It's SFN. It's sfindie.com.
sfindie.com. Mm-hmm. So check that out. And of course, tickets for LA PodFest, September 23rd through the 25th. Mike Schmidt, where can people find you on the internet? Listen to your podcast.
You guys can get me at Mike@MikeSchmidtComedy.com. You can be my friend at Facebook.com/the40yearoldboy. You can follow me at Twitter.com/the40yearoldboy. And the 40-year-old boy podcast is available in iTunes or at art19/40yearoldboy. And, you can listen. It comes out every week, every Thursday morning.
You can also see 40-year-old boy live at the LA PodFest September 23rd through the 25th.
Will I have a code soon?
Yes, you will have a code.
I can't wait to give it to people.
You're going
to
have a code soon. Codes are going out very soon.
Thank you again for inviting me. It's my favorite weekend of the year. I am so excited to go back to PodFest this year, and I cannot wait.
It's awesome. It's really fun. It's a lot of fun. We've got a great mix. If you go to the website of shows we have had in the past, some new shows. We always like to keep an eye, make a couple shows that weren't there the last year or two and are back, like Who Charted, we just added. Mm-hmm. Karen Kilgariff's new Murder.
She wrote.
My favorite murder. My favorite murder podcast.
May I plug one more thing?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Before that, you know, I do a once a month show at the Three Clubs on Vine at Santa Monica in Hollywood. The next one is July 18th. It's called 20-20-20. Three comics doing 20 minutes each. I'm always one of them. Graham has done the show. We had Jim Pardo last month, Jackie Cation, a lot of funny people. I don't know who's going to be there in July except me, but tickets are available at goldstar.com right now for $5. Just look up 20-20-20, and we're there July 18th.
cool.
It's a great, it's a, Three of Clubs is a really cool old bar. It's got a lot of sort of old Hollywood charm and feel to it. The back room where they do the show is a really cool, intimate space. I love doing the show there. That was the first time I'd set foot in that bar in probably 10 years. And I remember doing shows there a million years ago. So it's really cool. So check that out. And it's, and the, why it's sort of a unique thing is longer sets are harder to come by in LA because people are usually doing 5 or 10 minute sets. So seeing someone do a 20 minute set is cool.
That's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to have like a fun vibe, you know, like, and to get, I want you guys to hang out. You know, I mean, Siegel came to see Pardo and we all hung out and made fun. Brandy Posey was there. It was just weird. It's, I'm trying to get my friends and then also new comics and just people. I just want funny.
Yeah.
And people can tell stories. They can be funny for 20 minutes. They can do stand up. I don't care. Just come in, be funny, and have fun.
Sweet. So that's our show, episode, 324, put it in the books.
Episode UDL.
UDL.
Undisclosed location.
Undisclosed location at a hotel. Yeah. So thank you guys once again. And okay, we'll be announcing more earbuds screenings and film festivals and stuff like that.
And when is the Podcast Movement one?
I will be screening earbuds at Podcast Movement in Chicago, July 7th. I will be there July 6th, 7th, and 8th, just going to various things. But we screen the movie July 7th at Podcast Movement. So go to their website and get more details from that. If you're in the Chicago area, go to Podcast Movement. All right, that's our show. Thanks again, Mike Schmidt.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Glad you made the drive up. Very cool.
I'm happy to do it, man. I was going to come Saturday, and then it was like, you know what? I'd rather do a Tuesday thing because there's a 7:30 show, and I can get out of there earlier.
Perfect. Yeah, the show on Saturday was 4:30.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God.
Well, you would have missed early everything.
Bird. Does that come with Fruit Cup? That's a little early bird special. I like it.
Fruit Cup. All right. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
El Chivo.
Hey, the goat.
That was great.